The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Workers at the Mercedes plant in Alabama are moving forward in their effort to join the United Auto Workers. That vote any day now. Meanwhile, a giant in labor stepping down. And today on the show, soccer ref celebrating a 7-year contract. And we talk about life working on the grocery line. Welcome to the Thursday, April 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least 5 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have 2 guests on the show today. We are going to start things off with Peter Manikowski. If that name sounds familiar, well, he was on the show not too long ago talking about the fact that they were locked out, they being the Professional Soccer Referees Association. Here's their website, psraofficials.com. Peter serves as president. Well, the good news is this. The lockout is over. Lasted 37 days, and it came out with a 7-year labor contract, which will average, I guess this year, close to a 29% in a wage increase. But the big story, of course, was dealing with the Professional Referee Association, and they were playing real hardball, and they hired replacement workers. And I'll tell you know, refs get a pretty bad rap no matter who they are. But in this case, they brought some people in, and they were making some bad calls, and a lot of the fans were not very happy with what happened with Major League Soccer. So we'll talk about that and obviously get into the details of that contract. That's how many times you get a 7-year contract? Wow, that's amazing. Our second guest on the show is Adam Kott. He's an interesting guy. He is the author of Life on the Grocery Line, a frontline experience in a global pandemic. He also wrote a novel titled The Patron Saints of Grocery. His story is quite compelling. After college, Adam bounced around from different corporate jobs, lowly corporate jobs. He said, you know what? And this was on the West Coast. He said, you know what? I need a change of scenery. So he ended up in Denver, Colorado, and he started working in a grocery store, a high-end grocery store, and then the pandemic hit. It's an interesting book on how he had to work. And you remember me talking about how everybody in the front line, first responders, people in the grocery stores, because they had to stay open, you know, we have to eat, and how he was treated by the customers. And there were some nasty parts in that book. So sad. So he decided to, chronicle everything that was going on. And that's where this book happened. And he's going to talk about it as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Factory workers at Mercedes-Benz Assembly Plant in Alabama plan to file a petition for a union vote this week. In fact, it may be happening right now. The workers are pressing forward in their effort to organize with the United Auto Workers after encountering significant resistance from the company. Now, we talked about this last week. So the UAW filed unfair labor practice charges against the Mercedes-Benz group, alleging aggressive and illegal union busting. And mind you, in February, the U.S. Department of Labor recovered $438,000 in back wages, unpaid bonuses, and damages for 2 former workers at that plant. This is in Vance, Alabama, after management violated their rights to protected leave under the Family and Medical Leave Act. We got into some specifics on this. One of the individuals was Al Azel, a public union supporter who has stage 4 lung cancer. He's got to have his medication. He needs his phone nearby. Company said no phones, but they made an exception in his case. And then one of the supervisors said, we don't know anything about that. It's crazy, crazy situation. Bottom line, the vote at Mercedes would follow a similar push at Volkswagen's assembly plant. That would be in Tennessee, where voting is scheduled to end on April 19th. That's a 3-day period, April 17th, 18th, and 19th, that they'll be voting on that. Let's talk about the Teamsters here. Bud Tenders, that's right, Bud Tenders at Boterra Cannabis. This is in Brockton, Massachusetts, have voted unanimously to ratify their first collective bargaining agreement with Teamsters Local 653. The Bud Tenders, cashiers, inventory, and security staff are the first group of cannabis workers in New England to be covered under a Teamsters contract. Peter Finn is the Teamsters Western Region International Vice President. He's also the Director of Food Processing, their division there. They have like 19 divisions in the Teamsters. Peter said, we look forward to securing strong collective bargaining agreements like this one at other dispensaries throughout the region. Working families in Massachusetts and beyond know that a Teamsters contract is a ticket to the middle class, whether in cannabis or any other industry. And then there's Brian Votzi. Brian's the business agent. He said the workers in the bargaining committee did a great job with this contract, which will set the standard for others in the New England cannabis industry who are seeking representation. And I understand there's many standing in line to do that. The local, again, that's 653, represents workers in a wide variety of industries throughout the South Shore of Massachusetts. Labor leader Dee Taylor, whose 4-decade career in union organizing included helping Culinary Workers Union Local 226 become a Nevada political power, is stepping down after 12 years as president of Unite Here. Now, this is a union with 300,000 members. Unite Here said Taylor's departure actually took effect Easter Sunday, but didn't make the announcement until this past Monday. He said, I believe the next generation of leaders should get their shot. Now, Taylor is 67. Now, his given name is Donald, but he always went by D. He will continue to serve as chair of the union's health and welfare fund and support ongoing efforts to organize the gaming industry. And he said on Monday that the Culinary in Las Vegas, which has 60,000 members, could grow up to 70,000, maybe 75,000, given the prospects for organizing several non-union resorts. That includes the Venetian and the Fontainebleau in Las Vegas. He said in an interview, I'm not retiring. I'm not going to stop working. I think it can be helpful with gaming and other locations based on my relationship here in Nevada. Now, Gwen Mills is the secretary treasurer. She is expected to succeed Dee Taylor as president, becoming the organization's first female president. And she says she feels pretty good about taking over Unite Here. And Dee likened the transition to when he departed the Culinary Union for the national organization. And Gioconda Arguello-Klein became the first woman to lead the Las Vegas organization. He said, it's appropriate, and we have leadership now that is more effective of the membership, which I think is key. It used to drive me crazy to hear about somebody's potential being younger and more diverse is where we need to go, and I'm excited because I think I have helped develop that team. Taylor took over the National Union in 2012, after spending parts of 3 decades helping the Culinary become Nevada's largest labor organization, has become a potent political force fed by state and national Democrats. Ted Papageorge, who we had on the show not too long ago, he's secretary treasurer of Culinary. He said in a statement that Taylor was a steadfast champion of worker and immigrant rights and health care reform and spearheaded innovative language at the bargaining table. Ted went on to say, generations of both union and non-union members have been changed forever because of his sacrifice and unwavering commitment, and we are proud to call him brother, friend, and mentor. Also, Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, had this to say, D. Taylor's legacy is one of building power for low-wage workers whose shot at a decent standard of living is tied directly to the strength of their union. His storied career in the labor movement includes countless victories for hospitality workers, first in Nevada as head of culinary, and for the past 12 years as leader of the International Union. Through it all, Dee remained 100% grounded in the work to ensure that one job should be enough, which became a rallying cry for people working across the country. Boy, there was a time in America all you needed was one job. Boy, those days are long gone. But when you got a union, that one job is all it takes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Professional Soccer Referees Association talking about their new contract, a 7-year deal. That story coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Founded in 1887, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters represents the employees responsible for tirelessly constructing and maintaining the national rail system in America. For more than a century, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees has proven they have what it takes to protect its members and meet the ever-changing challenges of the rail industry. Today, the BMWED continues to fight for job security, fair wages, better benefits, and safer, more modern work environments. For more information, please visit BMWE.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Hi, this is Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. You know, Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, loggers, and miners. Well, in 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen its commitment to organized labor. And today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers, advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families. Working hard for America's working families, for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, let's go to line number one, and welcome back to the show. We had him on, not even a month ago. Peter Manikowski is his name. He's president of the Professional Soccer Referees Association, PSRA, PSRAofficials.com is their website. And when we were talking to him, his refs were locked out. That has all come to an end. Peter, welcome back to America's Workforce. You know what? I have to take a little credit, you know, because once you told the story here on America's Workforce, you know, we're in the top 1%. I'm being real bold here, okay? We're in the top 1% of all podcasts. And, you know, when the word got out and you showed us your frustrations here, all of a sudden things started happening. So congratulations on a 7-year contract, buddy. That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm really glad to be back on. And I think what you said is exactly right. We got so much help from labor, from different news organizations, some really in-depth reporting of the issues that came across, and all those things helped us out in our effort for sure.
Well, one of the big stories that came out was a lot of people, a lot of the fans were not too happy with the replacement refs. I want to get into the contract, but let's talk about that time during the lockout. And you've been through this before, but what did you hear? What did you hear while this was going on, Peter?
It was really a bad situation with the fans just not enjoying the matches. And it wasn't just the fans, of course, it was the players. The players' union put out a couple of excellent statements about it. The players' union helped us behind the scenes, and you know, when labor sticks together, that's when we're the strongest, and that's the real story. And we had fans reaching out individually. We had fans donating money to our work stoppage fund to help our members, and we really appreciated the solidarity of the fans and a lot of the venues. It was really amazing.
I know one of the reports said there were numerous game-altering decisions that were criticized by coaches, players, and fans. So we're talking games here that probably didn't go the right way, and I'm sure that just raised the frustration level. Would you say that probably is what kind of pushed it over the edge here so they would meet with you?
Well, I think it was that. After, you know, there was a little bit of rumblings at the beginning, but as the third week, the fourth week went on, and as I mentioned before, the players' union certainly started to speak up quite a bit more, and some of the coaches and the fans also kind of explaining their exasperation with what was going on. Because, you know, the fans wanted the fair game. The most enjoyable game, and they weren't getting it. And that frustration really, I think in the end, helped on a couple of key issues as we moved into the negotiating table about a month into the lockout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get into some of those issues, too, and what you were able to iron out. But didn't you go, I kind of recall this from the last time you and I talked, didn't you go through this before with the league as far as a lockout is concerned?
We did about 10 years ago, back in 2014. We were negotiating our first contract, and the first contract was not done prior to the start of the regular season. And there was a lockout that went for two weekends of matches at that time. And the situation was a little bit different then. Over there, we were coming to a close of negotiations, and there wasn't so much of a fan outreach at the time. But this time there was a lot more fan awareness because the fans are educated people. You know, they're mm-hmm. customers of the league. They know what should be happening on the field of play, and they weren't seeing it. And
Fans are more vocal today than ever before. There's no question about that. Now, that was 10 years ago. The same people, I wonder, did you deal with the same people from 10 years ago on this one?
The pro management staff has had a changeover. Some of the same folks in Major League Soccer's executive offices are the same. And of course the attorneys that they were using are, you know, the same law firm that you might expect from management. So quite a few of the same players. And we had quite a few of the same folks on our end, on our negotiating committee as well. So like I explained about a month ago, you know, some of the tactics that were used, we expected them, and thankfully we had a good resolution for our members.
Yeah, that's all that matters. You know what? Why don't you refresh our listeners? I'm sure we get new listeners every day. You mentioned some of the tactics. I mean, was this tantamount to pretty much union busting, what they were doing?
Well, we certainly got that sense because, once the lockout began, some of the tactics were quite aggressive. We had filed various unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board to attempt to resolve some of these issues. And it was designed, I think, in a way to get some of the members to cross, and to some of the members to leave the union and those other things to happen. And that was, of course, disappointing because we thought, you know, our relationship was more collaborative than that going into the negotiations. And I guess when the rubber hit the road, it wasn't so. Mm-hmm. And we hope to certainly build back to that in the coming months and years.
Did you lose anybody? Did everybody stick together on this one, or did there a few people drift away?
So our membership was 260. Now our membership is 257. So we had a couple of folks who did drift away. Mm-hmm. But out of our 100 officials who were directly affected, they stood in an amazing solidarity. I don't know if I told you a month ago, but if you would have ever asked me if we would have seen soccer referees picketing on Fifth Avenue in New York, I would have thought that was just nonsense. But we saw it happen, and we saw it happen week after week, and we saw people from the public joining our picket, soccer fans from the public joining our picket on Fifth Avenue. And the solidarity on that was just amazing.
Was that just in New York or in other cities as well?
We also had a picket event in Dallas just after the start of the lockout as well.
Yeah.
But most of our picketing was outside of company headquarters at 38th and 5th. Yeah.
Well, New Yorkers are pretty vocal, so I'm sure you heard a lot on that one. You mentioned the tactics. Can you get into it? I think it's important that people that listen to this show know what kind of crap they have to deal with when they try to get a contract or try to organize. I mean, and you know, there's a ton of organizing going on. I've been talking about the auto workers here. They're trying to, they're forcing a vote in Mercedes-Benz plant in Alabama. Now, that's a tough state. That's a right-to-work state. And all the politicians are lining up, but it's ridiculous. They, too, unfair labor practice charges. But you know what? It's important for our audience to know what kind of stuff is going on there. I mean, they even hired a law firm. You want to get into some of that?
Sure. And like I said, when you go up against big business, these things unfortunately are to be expected. You know, there are some companies out there that take the high road that say, let's work this in a positive and collaborative way. Everybody knows the limits, but let's get to a contract.
Right.
Conversely, you have, you know, companies that are trying to grind on workers who are making $20,000 a year. And we had, at the time, what was a dual track proposal, which was to, you know, continue negotiating from a way far back proposal, going back 2 months of negotiations, and the company saying, we're going to start backwards from there, taking a lot of things off the table that were already on the table, or to re-vote, which was the first contract, or the first tentative agreement, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was a very aggressive approach, certainly something we expected. But it took a member solidarity to break through that and to not let the company's tactics prevail. That's just one example. We had, of course, the other ones, and the recruitment and the protection of the scabs was something certainly we expected, but really unfortunate that it came to that. The company actively protecting scab officials was no good.
Protecting scabs, that's ridiculous. But after 37 days, the lockout has come to an end. This happened last week. Peter Manikowski joining us. We're going to talk about the contract, that seven-year deal. And Peter is the president of the Professional Soccer Referees Association, PSRAofficials.com. That's the website. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Adam Cott. Now, Adam tells an interesting story of life working in a grocery store during the pandemic. It's crazy, crazy stuff. You'll hear it later in the show. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Peter Manikowski, president of the Professional Soccer Referees Association. A little background on this group. This is an association of soccer officials who service the professional game across North America. They were formed back in 2009 by the collection of professional referees who, in order to continue thriving within the professional game, needed to have a voice with the organizations that they work for. That's what it's all about. And Peter, 16 years as an assistant ref, over 226 regular season matches, three championship cups, 15 years in finance. He is also a labor economist for, and he worked for a couple of unions, been doing that since 2016. But Peter, let's zero in on this contract. Number one, were you going after a seven-year deal from the get-go? I mean, this is unheard of. Usually maybe 3 years, maybe four, seven. How did that happen?
Well, our preference was for a shorter-term deal. And our first two contracts were 5 years each. The first tentative agreement that we had that was rejected was also a five-year agreement. And, you know, through the course of negotiations during the lockout, you know, as you might expect, the company wanted more years. And we wanted cash in wages. We wanted cash in benefits and other opportunities for growth within the contract. And the 7 years certainly was the quid pro quo for these different changes in wages and benefits, which we did achieve. And, you know, I've got to say that despite the some of the bizarre tactics and hard tactics that the company was using, is that when we finally sat down and bargained this out, is that there was productive bargaining. I've got to give some credit there. And the company knew exactly what it wanted at that stage, and we knew exactly what we wanted, and we were able to work those things out. And you know, the seven years was a hot topic within the democratic procedure that we use to ratify contracts. You know, some members thinking that we should renegotiate sooner, others being comfortable with the 7 years because of the wage increases that we achieved. And I really got a point to the democratic process that folks have, because all the opinions were shared. Everyone's voice was heard who wanted to speak, and the members finally voted on the thing. And I'm very proud of the democratic procedure that we used, because that's what we're all about. That's how our union operates. And every member got a chance to voice their opinion.
It's pretty much how all unions operate. I'm reading here an increase of 28.36% this year. Is that right? Maybe you could break this down for us.
Yeah, that's right. When you take the wages for the whole group, that's the right number. And then we have out-year increases of 7% in 2016, 3% for some other years, and then 4% in each of those additional years, 5, 6, and 7. And, you know, the wages of the group are climbing steadily. And these numbers that you see for guaranteed increases are great, right? I mean, they help the contract grow. And the way that this was designed, you know, sometimes you hear about front-loading a contract with wages or back-loading a contract with wages. And in my view, this did both. And I'm quite proud of that in the way that this was done, so that we have an upfront bump, and we have a bump in the end of the contract. And when you put it all together, it made a package that the members were satisfied with in the end. But you know, a lot of analysis went into that. Is would it be worth it for the extra couple of years on the end of the contract when you have these infusions of cash throughout the term of the agreement? And in the end, the members decided that that was suitable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's good and there's bad. I mean, 7 years out, you don't know where inflation's going to be, and you don't know where the league is going to be. But the good news is you got a signed contract. The lockout is over. Now, the association making a lot of money. My guess that they've been pretty profitable. Is that right?
You know, the revenue figures are very interesting in MLS, right? They have new TV deals. They have lots of new sponsorships, and those are really excellent and exciting things. And you know, we support everything that they've got going over there. We think that this contract certainly helps keep up with those revenues, so that we're not left behind. As you know, the World Cup is coming to USA and Canada and Mexico in 2026. Yeah, it's going to be a very exciting event. Some of our members are going to be working in the World Cup, we hope. And, you know, that's going to be another big bump to soccer in the USA and Canada. And we're hoping that the way that we design the contract keeps up with what that bump might be.
And Peter, if you don't mind, where are we with the season? Soccer is not one of the things that I apologize for that. It's not one of the things that I monitor, but where are we with the season? I'm reading that the replacement officials were used in the first 69 games, but where are we right now?
Sure. And our season is structured a little bit like the NFL season. You know, the NFL having 16 weeks, our season has 34 weeks, and we're coming up upon the sixth week now. And there's a long, long season to go. This is a season that goes from February, and then the final matches are played in November. So it's a it's a long and hard season, and our members are certainly up to it.
Good to hear. You know, those the scabs, they call them replacement officials in the article that I'm reading, but they're scabs. Were they paying them well, to your knowledge? And I bring this up, too, because I saw some nurses are on strike out on the West Coast. And the county over there is paying exorbitant money. because they got to keep the hospitals open. And obviously in this situation with soccer, they got to keep the games going. So to your knowledge, were they paying them a pretty decent salary to keep to keep things going?
Well, I'm not sure that it was excellent pay or top pay. But what they did was they guaranteed a certain number of matches of work right off the bat. So if the lockout would have gone 1 week, they would have still paid for three. Right. And you might see that in the nurses ones as well, where they guarantee the contract nurses who come in, you know, a certain number of weeks of pay or a certain number of days of pay, regardless of the length of the strike. And that's what happened over here with us as well, is they were guaranteed a certain number of weeks of pay, regardless of how much they might ultimately work. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's another tactic that kind of like we talked about before, which is just, in my view, to kind of stick it to labor, which is to say we're willing to overpay for a certain period of time, but we won't pay you.
Right, right.
And to me, that's just a real stick in the eye sometimes.
Yeah, there's many that they pull out of their playbook there, and it's sad that this has to go on. But the bottom line is you got a 7-year contract. The 37-day lockout is over. And you've been doing this for quite some time. You feel that everybody, is it kind of back to normal now? I mean, obviously there was some fighting going on. There was probably a number of people in the union that had, you know, kind of their eyebrows raised up and said, wait a minute, how could we be locked out? Is that pretty much in the past now then, Peter?
So I've got to say the workers are really unhappy about what was happening. With respect to the way that they were treated over the course of over the 37 days and going into it. And it's not a happy place to work right now, as you might expect. And I think it's going to take a lot of time to hopefully make this workplace a happy workplace again, like it was a couple of years ago. And that's something that, you know, our leadership is certainly working on. We're trying to work with management on this to rebuild some of the old trust that we had. But you know, our folks are professionals. When they go on the field to play, they'll do their job exactly as they should. But during the week and during training camps, it's not a good environment. And that's something really I think management has to take ownership of and try to turn around. I hope they do.
Yeah, we'll see what happens here. Yeah, that's tough. That's tough when you're locked out like that. Boy, everything goes through your mind. You don't even know if you're going to get back in that job. But best of luck to you. Best of luck to all the refs there. Peter Manikowski, president of the Professional Soccer Referees Association, PSRAofficials.com. Please keep in touch. You always got a friend here on America's Workforce. Okay, Peter?
Thanks so much. It's great to be with Labor.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Adam Cott will be joining us. He's going to talk about life working at a grocery store during the pandemic. That story coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Everything is archived there. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, where you can find more at ulagency.org. All right, let's go to our live line and join Adam Cott. Adam is from Denver, Colorado. He's got an interesting story to tell. He worked in a grocery store, a high-end grocery store in Denver, and he started working there right before the pandemic. And you remember listening to the show, how we talked about those who worked in the front lines, how all of a sudden they were zeros and they became heroes. And I'll tell you, the people that they had to deal with, and it's all chronicled in Life on the Grocery Line. Adam, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. But let's go before that time, before you worked at Dream Grocers. And you were on, I believe, on the West Coast. You were kind of corporate. You were thinking about writing a novel. And this is before what happened with the shutdown and the pandemic. Take me back to that time. Let's get into it, and we'll talk about the book. Go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you for having me, by the way. I really appreciate being on the show. So I had bounced around in corporate account services jobs. So basically customer service, but business to business.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing that for, I don't know, maybe 8 years, 9 years, 18. And I started a new job that was supposed to be really good. It was supposed to be a level up in my career. And it just wasn't. The manager was horrible. It was a horrible situation, a lot of stress, unnecessary anxiety, stress is going on. It was a good company move. But so I decided, you know what? I'm gonna take some time for myself. I'm actually going to take a break, because I knew that I could go back and do this customer service stuff at some other point. And I quit that job without having a job, which I've never done before. And I decided to work on the novel that I've been wanting to write for a decade or so, and just never sat down to do it. So mm-hmm. I sat down and I got to about a 90-100 page draft of the novel, and I ran out of my 401k that I cashed out. Don't do that, folks out there. Don't do the money. I feel like if you do that for something that you're pursuing a dream and you have time and you don't have kids or something, I think it's a great idea. But I ran out of money, and I knew that I love talking to people. So I walking distance. So I got a job as a cashier, January 2020. So I could work at night and write in the morning, because that's when I'm most creative. I started to work on it, but right away, by March, everything hit the fan. Everything changed, and I started blogging about what I was going through. And people just were drawn to it. Everyone was home. And anyone that was working was probably in a grocery store working through it. And those stories grew and grew and grew in popularity. And I decided to turn all those stories into a novel that follows Daniel the first week on the job at a high-end grocery store as the pandemic hits. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's the catalyst to change my life.
So your encounter, especially with the customers, was rather interesting. There's some really good tidbits that I was reading through, especially about the rotisserie chicken. maybe you could go back to that time, because I just laughed out loud when I read it. But talk to me about that.
Oh, that's a high-end grocery store I worked at, Dream Grocers. It was, and that's the fictionalized name, just so everyone knows. But you would get the most absurd conversations with these entitled, old money stale, crusty people that like didn't even recognize you as human in a lot of ways. Like, mm-hmm. now it wasn't all those interactions, obviously. There's a lot of really wonderful people that go through the line. They want to know about your life. They talk it up. You know, they find some joy in having a conversation with these people. But yeah, I remember the specific one that I relay in the book, this woman and her daughter, they like wouldn't acknowledge me. And then she had a rotisserie chicken that was leaking and she wanted to return it. So it's like, I had to sit there smelling. I mean, normally that's a nice smell. I love a good rotisserie chicken for sure. But
right.
sitting there at my register, like a go back, and it's not like I'm going to be able to just leave and bring it back to wherever. So I just had this marinate in that smell and it's like leaking all over by the register and everything. And it's just the way that some people just dehumanize you as a service industry person, like working in customer service or as a cashier, a server at a restaurant, is really horrible. It does make it pretty amazing when people are really nice to you. But mm-hmm. like, I'd see that so often at that place. And I think a lot of it had to do with the neighborhood it was in.
Yep. People take their frustrations out. They didn't like the shutdown. They certainly didn't like wearing masks, and they didn't like the government. Many of them still don't like the government. But you had to deal with it. You were on the front line. I have to, you know this is a union show, and one thing that we talked about on this show is the fact that many stores like that, they figured, you know what, we got to do better. We have to organize here. We got to get some union protections going. Now, did any of that happen at this grocery store, this high-end grocery store in Denver?
No. I mean, there wasn't any movement towards that. I remember people were talking about it. And I wasn't, yeah. I think there was going to be like a heavier, some sort of organ, like a meeting, but it was after I left. There was a lot of talk of that, and it made sense. You know, like, I mean, you don't have any leverage in that situation, right? Like you're paid $15 an hour, and all of a sudden, unbeknownst to you, you're forced into a situation that could be a huge health risk, you know, like and dealing with a whole different level of stresses too that are going on. It's like empty shelves. People are just in a mad frenzy, angry all the time. It's not the same position as it was before. Because I took the job as like, you know, something where I could just, you know, chat it up with people, have a good time for the most part. And I'm sure I'd get bad customers, but I was taking it to like give myself some sort of mental break at night and then not have like the stress of work carrying over. Like it was a part-time job too. It wasn't full-time. And, you know, you do that and people were certainly mean to us. It was disheartening sometimes, but then I relate a good story in the book. There was in the neighborhood, obviously there's a lot of very rich people that work around there. And there was a gentleman that came in all the time with like, I think it was, he had whole carts for like 5 weeks straight. And he'd go through my line on purpose and he'd talk to me. And it turned out he was a brain surgeon who had like 6 kids and he liked to do the shopping. But he didn't want to talk about anything else besides what was going on in my life and what was going on with the cashiers. So, mm-hmm. or like the other people in the store. He's really generous in spirit. And when I told him I was writing a novel, he was like, oh man, that's awesome. I could never do that. I'm like, I couldn't cut open someone's skull. I didn't think he'd be impressed by it, but he was very genuine and good. It was a very leveling event for some people. And it was a magnifying of people's worst characteristics in others.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good that at least somebody came forward and helped you out on that. A couple questions here. How did you cope with this? Because the stress had to be crazy going through the pandemic with all the customers, and most of them were just nasty. But the other part of this, financially, I mean, you're making $15 an hour, you're living in Denver, and you just used up your 401k. How did you get through this, Adam? I mean, this had to be a challenge.
Yeah, the writing saved me for mentally for the stress. And also being, I did like, okay, so one thing those nights was having to go into work and talk to people. like the actual human connection. So I wasn't isolated away. As miserable as it was and stressful, at least there were some other people I could commiserate with in person about, you know, our struggles, what's going on, talk through things, you know, instead of doom scrolling at home. If I was living in the, if I was in the pajama class where they get to work from home the whole time. The financial end, I honestly, like, I burned, basically burned up all my credit cards on that for a while. And that's why I just kept on kicking it down the road. I was kind of betting on myself for the books. And I don't know, making a very poor financial decision. But I ended up, like, getting a much better job once, like, they took off hiring freezes, which they had for a long time. You know, until, I don't know, mid 2021 was when I finally got something else that I could pay more. But I'm still climbing myself out of that hole. So
yeah,
it was, they're definitely, like, grocery store workers, especially in that circumstance, were extremely underpaid. And I felt like it was completely, like, yeah, unionize and organize yourself to get more pay and benefits. Like, the bonus we got was, like, $300 or something like that. It was just, like, after all this, that's what we get. Like, in an extra $2 an hour. It just seemed, like, patronizing, especially when people are calling you, like, a hero at the same time. Like, very confusing situation. Seems silly.
Right. Well, with what happened there, that's exactly what spurred so many movements. Trader Joe's, REI, Starbucks, Amazon. I mean, these workers, they're just not getting paid enough. They're putting up with a lot, including injuries on the job. But and that's still continuing as we speak. So eventually, now I read you became a supervisor, but you're out of it now. You have moved on with your life, haven't you?
Yeah, I desperately needed money. And so I went back to, like, where I have a lot of experience. I have a lot of experience in supply chain, and I was able to, like, move into a role that was better paying. But the whole of working in the grocery store sticks to me like it's in my bones. I remember it was somewhere in 2021. I felt like I woke up out of a fever dream. Like, things started to open back up. And then I could start looking back on what happened. And I'm forever grateful for all the people that I worked with and all the, like, people lost their lives. It was a horrible few years for people. It really was rough. But it ended up, like, my decision to, like, bet on myself seemed to work out. And I was very, I was grateful for it. But it's going to make me, I was already really nice to, you know, service industry folks, but, like, I'm permanently, like, it's like there's a brotherhood now in my mind.
Yeah.
I'm, like, so thankful for them in every way.
Well, Adam, I thank you for joining us here on America's Workforce. It takes me back to the time that we talked about, and I said this earlier in the segment, about so many stories of what people went through, which actually led to many unionization drives. Sadly, it didn't happen at the grocery store that you worked in, but I appreciate you coming to the table today. Adam Cott, author of Life in the Grocery Line. He's got another one out, too, the Patron Saints of Grocery. So do check them out. And I'm sure a lot of people listening that are working in those shops will probably want to hear your story. So congratulations to moving on with your life. And thank you for joining us today. Okay, Adam?
Well, thank you so much for having me. You can pick up both books at Amazon.com. That's honestly the best place to get it. And it's the author's most. It's the best for the author. And yeah, I really think that anyone in the service industry and the grocery industry, they will enjoy this book on a whole different level. So if you have any friends that work in those industries, and I also, in a way, I know you can't do much advocacy. It's hard to in a busy life, but I feel like the books do that in a sense. They humanize people that maybe go underappreciated, underlooked, and I hope that it makes people read my books and they're nicer to their fellow human being that's trying to help them out finding, you know, whatever in their grocery store or something. But thank you so much for having me.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. And it's our first Friday with Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.